and he looked tortured and miserable too. His statement hurt, but I swallowed it down.
"I don't blame you,"
I said softly, reasonably, my temper pushing against my good sense and desire for calm. "I've been having similar thoughts about ending the arrangement, but I do want to know, why now?" He glared at me as though I was the source of his misery.
"You know. You must know."
"I don't know. If it's not the kiss, then I don't know, because you never tell me anything." I erupted, surprising both him and me.
I wasn't finished.
"I thought I could do this, but you're right. It's not working. I don't like lying to people. I'm not good at it."
"From where I'm standing, you're extremely good at it. You've been very convincing,"
he ground out. I reared back as though slapped. Is that supposed to be praise? Because it sounded like an insult. "Let me put it this way. If I knew why you were calling this off, I wouldn't have to ask. People ask questions because they don't know things. If I just magically knew what you were thinking, I'd open up a sideshow act as the omniscient woman." Yeah, I was yelling, but damn it, I was angry and frustrated. A fierce storm gathered behind his eyes.
"Then let me spell it out for you, babe."
"Please do, husband."
"I want you."
I stared at him and waited. When he didn't continue his thought or add an explanation, just glared at me with defiance, I said, "You want me to what?"
"No, Abby,"
he seethed.
"I want you."
Chapter 21. There is no dishonor in losing the race. There's only dishonor in not racing because you are afraid to lose. Garth Stein, The Art of Racing in the Rain. It took a minute of me staring, then thinking, then sputtering, then staring at him some more, questioning whether I'd misheard, before his words finally sunk in. "What? No, I'm the placeholder, not the place." His eyes narrowed. I'd obviously confused him.
"Placeholder?"
I waved away the question I wasn't going to answer and focused on the giant elephant in the room, twirling on point in its pink tutu. "You want me? Since when?" I'm not too proud to admit that I shrieked this question. A flicker of something like discomfort or guilt dimmed his stare and he clamped his mouth shut. He's serious. Oh my God, he was serious. "I'm sorry, but I need a minute to recover from this deus ex machina moment, Rex. This seems really sudden, really freaking sudden."
"You can't be this blind."
I lifted a finger between us, glaring daggers at him, my temper rising in temperature to a boiling lava pit in the span of a single second. "Don't you dare call me stupid."
"You aren't stupid, but you're blinder than a bat with its head up its ass."
I threw my hands up. "Then tell me, since when? Since when have you..."
"Since I woke up hungover in your apartment."
Blinking uncontrollably, my spine stiffened. "No. Now you're joking."
"You made it so easy,"
he ground out, his tone hostile and accusing, and it had me wondering whether I had been pushing a sinister master plan all along and I'd just expertly outmaneuvered him without consciously being aware of having a master plan. But no. I'd had no plan. I just wanted to help. And I'd lied for him. "What did I make easy?" I asked, entranced and baffled, not knowing whether to laugh or cry.
"Falling,"
he said, as though falling were a different F-word. But some of his temper deflated as he added,
"It was inescapable. It was like..."
He shook his head in a subtle movement.
"Falling for you was like gravity."
Every nerve ending in my body seemed to be firing at once. I still couldn't think, let alone wrap my mind around what he was saying. He'd wanted me since that first morning? Then why would you suggest I fake marry you? Why would you tell me this was a business arrangement if you actually wanted me?
"You said you didn't date."
My mouth opened and closed to no purpose until I finally blurted, "You wanted to date me?"
"Obviously."
But
when you shot that down and Cyrus suggested I ask you to..."
"Wait." I held up my hand again. "Cyrus? This whole thing was Cyrus's idea?"
"He suggested fake dating. Getting married was my idea. I thought it was a good thing, liking you so much. I thought it would make the pretending easier."
"You..."
"It's torture. I can't. I miss you."
He seemed to swallow the "you" as he stumbled over his words, turning aimlessly, his voice a rake over gravel.
"It fucking hurts how much I miss you. And I don't want this. I can't concentrate. I can't think about anything else."
My ears rang as I studied his strong profile, how the muscle at his jaw flexed and released, the exhaustion in his posture, the cut and bruising over his eye. He looked so unhappy. I didn't understand my own emotions or what to think. I felt like someone had put me in a cocktail shaker. But I did know he needed food and rest, and I needed space and time to think. I couldn't think about this now. I hazarded a step toward him. "Rex,
is there a chance?"
I halted. "A chance?
Do you want me?"
Tone low and controlled, his eyes cut to mine. I froze, caught. I wouldn't lie, but I didn't want him to know. What good would him knowing do? We were never going to actually be together. His eyes narrowed and he faced me fully again.
"Do you want to be with me?"
Breathing out a tremendous breath that felt like it originated from the depth of my soul, I pressed my lips together to keep my chin from wobbling. I shook my head. He studied me for a long moment, as though I were a puzzle or a bomb he'd been sent to defuse.
"You do. You're lying."
"I'm not lying. I don't want to be with you." My eyes stung and I swallowed convulsively. "You're gonna have to tell him sooner or later, Abby." He looked so confused.
"But you want me."
"Oh, fuck." I cleared my throat to keep my voice steady. "I don't want to be with you because you're wrong about me. If you knew the truth, you wouldn't want me." He blinked, just once, and his expression turned calculating as he prowled a step forward.
"You want me. But you think I'm wrong about you, so you don't want to be with me."
It sounded crazy when he said it out loud like that, but it was the truth, and it had merit, damn it. For every step he took forward, I took one backward. "You said I'm rare. I'm common. You thought I had no wish list. I do." Rex's eyes widened, his forehead clearing.
"You have a wish list?"
I nodded.
"About me?"
I nodded again, grimacing. He cracked an adorable smile.
"What's on it?"
You're not listening. My heart twisted painfully, emotion clogging my throat. I've misled you. I've always liked you. Always. This whole time. All through school, kindergarten, through our senior year of high school.
You did?
Inexplicably, his smile grew. My back connected with a wall, forcing me to stop my retreat. I was a stalker. I stalked you. I was completely unhinged. Rex paused his advance, his smile wavering.
What did you do?
I used to sit across the street from the car wash where you worked. He seemed to debate this before lifting an eyebrow and asking warily,
Every day?
Once or twice a week. His smile returned, quizzical this time.
So?
So?
So did you sneak into my room and steal hair from my hairbrush?
No.
Did you send me threatening letters whenever I dated someone else, making plans to harm me or her?
What? No, of course not.
You didn't stalk me, Abby.
His gaze swept over me like he thought I was cute.
You had a crush on me.
No, I'm telling you, my crush was massive. I couldn't talk to you. That's why I had Rachel sit next to you at graduation. I would have melted into a pile of awkwardness and nonsense. I would doodle our name together in notebooks. In shop, our sophomore year, I used to stare at your bottom.
You're telling me right now you've had a thing for me since high school?
Elementary school.
Fine, elementary school, and that's supposed to be bad news? Are you fucking kidding me with this?
I couldn't catch my breath. I'm trying to tell you why I don't, why I'm not. He huffed, stalking forward again.
Do you want me, yes or no?
It's not that simple. I wasn't prepared for this. I'd meant what I'd said. I was the placeholder, not the place. Rex had a final destination person. I wasn't her.
It is that simple. Everything else is gravy.
It's not. He halted again, his features heartbreakingly patient. You're too good to be true, okay? I waved my hand up and down, gesturing to his entire person as my voice cracked. It'll never last. He winced, just the barest flicker of pain behind his expression.
Don't say that.
You're all my fantasies, every single one.
And you're all of mine.
So close now, Rex angled his head, waiting until I gave him my eyes to add,
Abby. I'm crazy about you.
You're not...
I am many, many things, but I am not too good to be true.
His expression was an odd combination of soft and stark. I choked on a laugh, continuing to shake my head. You are.
I'm an asshole.
You're wonderful.
I'm too gruff, demanding, bossy.
You're brooding and sexy. He cracked a smile, apparently just enchanted by this confession.
Babe, I will prove it to you.
How can you prove
I love you?
My mouth fell open, and an electric shock of hot disbelief followed, holding my lungs in a vice grip. What? You can't possibly,
for God's sake.
He growled as though he was nearing his wit's end, and his wit's end was a grizzly bear.
Tell me you want me. Tell me.
Stop interrupting. He lifted an eyebrow, and his lips curved into an almost smirk, like he had me, like my capitulation was certain. He was wrong. Nothing was simple. I wanted him, but what did that matter? He was too good to be true. I'd already lived through one fairy tale that had become a living nightmare. I had no interest in trying to survive another. Besides that, if the scales of power had been unbalanced with Declan, being with Rex would have been 10,000 times worse. Even if he wasn't a famous pro football player, and I wasn't a fan, and I wasn't me, broke bartender and cereal crafter, I had a long history of being a dummy for this guy. The sway he held over me, that I'd voluntarily surrendered to him, was staggering. I'd never lied for Declan, not even when he begged and cajoled and threatened, not even when I thought I was in love with him. But all Rex had to do was show up in my bar with that big sweater energy, and I'd tripped all over myself to make him happy, to help him, by lying.
"What?"
he asked, his voice a whisper.
"What are you thinking?"
Inhaling a steadying breath, I gestured behind him to the door we'd entered earlier. "I'm thinking this is what we're going to do. We are going to be logical and reasonable and not let our emotions get the better of us. We are going to figure this out so that we can both walk away from here with our friendship intact. And then we are going to kiss." That wasn't what I was going to say, but that's what Rex did. One minute I was gathering the wits he'd dispersed all over this room with his confession bomb, and the next he'd stepped into my space, gathered me to him, lifted my chin, and pressed his lovely, hot, persistent lips to mine, along with the hard, hot, insistent length of his body. So of course I moaned and wrapped my arms around his neck and kissed him back like I'd been waiting to do it for decades. Of course I did. And when he kept on kissing me, his fingers sliding just under the hem of my short skirt, the demanding, drugging slide of his mouth and tongue and teeth redispersing my wits all over the room, I simply did not have the energy to care. All I wanted was to be kissed by Rex, to be touched by him, to lose myself in his heat and the roughness of his hands, the starved dance of our tongues and the slippery, sweet taste of him. He was big and strong and intoxicating and everywhere, wrapping his arms around me to lift me off the ground, spread my legs, step between them and pin me against the wall. And I was an addict for it all. So when he separated our mouths and demanded,
"Tell me you want me,"
I capitulated. "I want you," I whimpered, my breath hitching at all the biting attentions of his teeth and lips, the demanding roll of his hips, the friction of his constrained erection rubbing just the right spot between my open thighs. It was the truth, but I would have said anything to feed this addiction. A primal sound rumbled from his chest, intensely pleased and masculine. He kissed and bit my neck as though he wanted to consume me, and I clawed at his jacket, pushing it off. And that's when the door opened.
"Ah, there you... Oh, damn."
A stream of hot air paired with a frustrated, rumbly growl fell along my neck and shoulder. I closed my eyes, too turned on to feel embarrassment, but I did try to catch my breath.
"Sorry, TW, everyone's looking for you guys. I'd give you more time, but we can't start anything without our game MVP.
I recognized the voices belonging to Ryan, Vanessa's husband. Rex inhaled deeply, drawing me into his lungs, and then he straightened. As my legs touched the ground, my eyes fluttered open. Our gazes locked, and my heart skipped. He wore the stare that I'd previously labeled inscrutable, but now I recognized for what it was. He wanted me. This was a gaze of longing.
"We'll be right there,"
Rex said, his voice flat. I knew his big body hid me from view, so I tugged at my skirt, pulling it back into place.
Okay, all right, but I'll just stand directly outside this door and keep watch for y'all. You know, just in case someone tries to bust in and interrupt this very wholesome Hallmark moment you two are having.
Despite all the chaos of the day, or maybe because of it, I laughed, sealing my lips together to cover the sound. Rex rolled his eyes. He also smiled.
Thank you, Ryan. I got you, bro,
came the quarterback's response. Rex studied me and waited until I finished fidgeting with my skirt before pushing his fingers gently into my hair, gathering my face for a soft, cherishing kiss.
I want to give myself to you,
he whispered against my mouth, liltingly, like these were words of seduction.
But you have to know, I am a selfish asshole sometimes.
I stared forward at his blurry outline, both petrified by the idea of Rex giving himself to me and amused by this description of himself. Anything that seems too good to be true always is.
The question is...
Rex's hands slid away. He leaned back and recaptured my gaze, his expression stark.
Will you still want me when you discover I'm not too good to be true?
If I'd considered Rex touchy-feely at that rehearsal dinner all those weeks ago, I'd been grossly mistaken. That night had been nothing compared to now. Nothing. We sat next to each other at one of many round tables, 8 people to a table. In general, each player was allowed to bring one date plus 2 family members. Accommodations were made for those with more than 2 children, but most players opted to leave the kids at home. According to Regina, people preferred to celebrate Thanksgiving with their families on Friday or Saturday in Chicago, instead of managing all the logistics of traveling with kids. I saw 3 babies and 1 toddler, and that's it. The room was beautifully decorated in fall colors, a giant and literal cornucopia full of wrapped presents sat along one wall. Regina told me the boxes were empty, but were labeled with items the players could sponsor for charities in Chicago. Everything from a $500 donation to Toys for Tots to a $100,000 donation for all the community food banks. Each table centerpiece was also in the shape of a cornucopia, but this one was made of bread, surrounded by edible rice paper autumn leaves, and filled with decadent-looking appetizers. Huge green cotton candy grapes, Italian cured meats and cheeses, candied nuts, delicate crackers, pâté, and brie baked in dough. My mouth watered as soon as I spotted the grapes, and I realized I hadn't eaten anything since before the game. I'd been too nervous, and then I'd been too engrossed in Rex's performance to think about food at the stadium. As soon as we arrived at our table, Rex pulled my seat out and assisted scooting it in. A real gentleman. He then settled his chair as close to mine as possible and placed his hand on my leg, pushing my dress up several inches and curling his fingers so they rested on my inner thigh, a scant distance from my underwear. I sent him a wide-eyed, meaningful look. His mouth curved in a whisper of a smile, and he leaned to my ear, sliding his nose against my neck.
Do you want me to stop?
Combating a shiver, I whispered back harshly. Would it matter if I did?
It's the only thing that matters,
he said.
But you have to tell me what you want before I can make it happen.
Then he kissed my neck and straightened, glancing at the menu on his plate like he didn't have a care in the world, his thumb rubbing a lazy circle on my skin. I tried to read the menu. I couldn't concentrate. Our conversation from earlier was still on repeat in my head, especially the part where he'd told me he loved me. That was solid gold crazy. How could he love me? He didn't even know me. We'd barely spent any time together. Yes, we texted and talked on the phone almost daily prior to just this last week, but love? Really? also, with his fingers so close to my underwear, his hand so hot, his touch so light and rhythmic, my thoughts couldn't gel. Clearly, I was a glutton for punishment because I didn't ask him to stop or remove his hand. When he finally did, as dinner arrived, I was inexplicably saddened by the loss of it. Conversation ebbed and flowed, but mostly flowed, and I felt content to sit back and observe Rex interact with his teammates and their wives. I wouldn't say I was exactly surprised to discover Vanessa and Rex had gone on one date, a charity gala like the one we'd attended a few weeks ago, and that's where she and Ryan had met. They'd married just 2 months later.
TW was my best man,
Ryan said, his eyes sparkling with a rascally glint.
He's everyone's best man. He's like James Bond, already has a tux for every season and occasion.
Xander Garcia, Regina's husband, added with a laugh. Rex had nothing to say to Xander's teasing, his features arranged in a patient but impassive mask.
Awfully selfish of you to get married,
Trent Compher said, winking at me.
How are the rest of us supposed to find wives now?
Regina picked up her wine glass.
It was always hopeless for you, Trent. Even before Rex got married and closed up his matchmaking shop, no one wants your ugly ass.
The table burst into laughter. Rex cracked a smile, but it was a small one and didn't quite reach his eyes. I felt someone's gaze on me and turned to find Vanessa sending me an empty smile that seemed to match Rex's. I sent her a warm one in return, working to hide mild confusion. I liked Vanessa a lot. She was amazing, kind, welcoming, brilliantly smart, and breathtakingly beautiful. So, even though I wasn't surprised that she and Rex had gone on a date, I was surprised they'd only gone on one date.
Hey.
Rex whispered against my neck, pressing a kiss there, making me shiver.
You okay?
I nodded, tilting my head back to look at him and whispering in return, "You okay?" His eyes warmed as they hooked into mine.
If you're okay, I'm more than okay. One thing is for sure, we all like TW with Abby.
Tearing my eyes from Rex's gorgeous hazel gaze, I discovered Trent had lifted his glass toward me.
Whatever magic you're working, keep doing it.
I scrunched my nose, but before I could reply, Ryan cut in.
Seriously, no offense, you know I love you, man, but you're so much nicer these days. Almost bearable,
Xander said with a teasing lilt.
And he's been so chatty. I got 2 words out of him last week. A miracle,
Ryan said with mock sincerity.
A true Christmas miracle. But meaner on the turf.
Trent was quick to add, leaning over the table to clink his glass against Rex's.
You had that Richmond offensive line pissing their pants by the third, and I love to see that. Abby has to come to all games from now on. Next week in particular, make sure she clears her schedule.
Ryan pointed at me.
What are we going to do about Callahan's offense?
The conversation turned to next week's game, and I stewed in the perplexing information that had just been shared about Rex. He'd been quiet all through school, sure. Even now, I wouldn't describe him as a talker, but he'd been fine with me. He talked to me. Except last week, when he was giving you the silent treatment. A tap on my shoulder had me turning. Vanessa indicated with her head to the exit.
Hey, wanna come with me to the bathroom?
I nodded, placing my napkin on the table and whispering to Rex.
I'll be right back.
His hand on my chair came to my back, his fingers trailing from my neck down my spine to my bottom, giving me a little pinch as I stood. I twisted, narrowing my eyes at him. Rex grinned with teeth, showing no remorse. Fighting an eye roll, I turned to Vanessa and we both strolled toward the exit. The back of my neck prickled and I twisted again, finding Rex still looking in our direction, his attention firmly affixed to my backside. Heat in my lungs, I huffed a short laugh, feeling less and less guilty for ogling his bottom during our sophomore year of high school.
I think I've had too much to drink. Vanessa linked her arm through mine. "Do you mind? I thought I was okay until I stood up." "Yeah, of course, no problem." I squeezed her arm with mine. "I'm very sturdy. Lean on me."
"You are sturdy," she said with a smile. "I like you with Rex. I think you're perfect for him."
My grin wobbled. "That's nice of you to say."
"I mean it. He's..."
She shook her head, suddenly frowning.
"He's not easy, is he?"
"I don't know about that. I think he's remarkably easy."
I knew she didn't mean the question to be insulting toward Rex, but I felt a pang of annoyance anyway. Maybe Rex didn't find it necessary to be bubbly and charming all the time, but I liked that about him. I always had. I liked his dry wit and unique brand of gruff gentleness.
"Really?"
See, she wagged a finger at me.
"This is why you're perfect together. Don't get me wrong. I've always liked Rex. He's solid. A real good guy."
Regina wasn't wrong when she said Rex had a matchmaking shop. I watched him do it for years. Date a woman, then pair her off with someone else. He introduced me to Ryan at the gala and then sent us home together in the same car.
She laughed, her nose wrinkling adorably. "If he weren't so great at football, he'd make a great CEO, I think."
"A CEO? Of what?"
"Doesn't matter. He's one of those individuals who sees the strengths and weaknesses in people and then knows how to, you know, pair them with someone who has complementary talents. He's good at putting teams together, getting the most out of people."
"That's what Ryan says. He's shrewd."
We made it to the bathroom, and miraculously there was no line. I opened the door and steered us inside, careful not to release Vanessa's arm. With her last sentence, she'd started slurring her words.
"Are you okay?"
Turning right toward the sitting area instead of left toward the stalls, I guided her to a sofa and squatted in front of her.
"Let me get you some water."
"I'm fine." She shook her head, leaning back against the sofa and sighing.
"Just need a minute, I think."
I didn't move, not wanting to leave her alone, and debated what to do. In my opinion, as a professional bartender, she was 2 drinks past sober, which meant she'd be feeling better in 2 hours if she stopped drinking now.
"Should I call Ryan?"
"No, we haven't even danced yet. He's such a good dancer." Her mouth formed a wistful smile, and she chuckled.
"He's just too good to be true."
I blinked, startled by her use of the phrase I'd had such a complicated relationship with for the last 10 years.
"How so?"
I found myself asking before I could catch the question. Vanessa's cloudy gaze drifted over me.
"Oh, you know, like how you feel about Rex. He's perfect for me. He's not serious like I am.
I'm too serious. He makes me laugh, rubs my shoulders. He's such a good dad. And he's so damn sexy, I swear." She heaved a dreamy sigh.
"That man."
Her eyes followed me as I sat next to her on the sofa, questions I probably shouldn't ask, pressing against my better sense.
"What is it?"
she asked, tapping my leg lightly with the back of her hand.
"How did you know he wasn't too good to be true?"
The question seemed to confuse her.
"He is too good to be true. I just said he was."
"Then is he not true? How did you know it was real?" She straightened from her reclining position and faced me fully.
"You mean, how did I know I could trust him?"
That wasn't precisely what I meant, but I nodded.
"Sure. How did you know you could trust him?"
A hazy, warm smile took over her features, and she cupped my face with her hand.
"Oh, honey. You can trust Rex. Is that what you're asking?"
"Listen." She dropped her palm to cover my hand and squeezed.
"I know it's scary, with all the fame and fans and attention.
But none of that matters at the end of the day when you're up all night with a sick kid, or you have a deadline at work and need him home to parent his children so you can get your job done. It's just you, the two of you. I know none of that matters in the long run, but how do you know there will be a long run? Rex feels too good to be true, and I don't know how to, that's the thing. He's yours. He's your too good to be true. I think Ryan is too good, but that's because he's mine. I doubt other people would put up with some of his more annoying habits. And I think some people would find me intolerable to live with. But we are perfect for each other. We click. Frowning, I tried to process what she said, but still stumbled over the simple fact that I couldn't imagine anyone finding Rex anything but perfect. Okay, think of it like this. What's your favorite dessert? Almond cake. Her head nod was over-exaggerated, likely due to her tipsiness. Good. Mine is Mississippi mud pie. To me, it tastes too good to be true. Whereas I've never been a huge fan of almonds. They're fine. I'd fry them up with onions and put them in green beans if I wanted to make a fancy vegetable side dish. I wouldn't want to marry almond cake, but I'd marry Mississippi mud pie tomorrow. I leaned back slowly, contemplating her words. Everyone has different tastes, and that's good. She tried to wink, but ended up blinking both eyes, just on a delay, one right after the other. Rex is your almond cake, Abby. And Ryan is my Mississippi mud pie.
Chapter 22. I figured something out. The future is unpredictable. John Green, an abundance of Catherines.
I wasn't precisely nervous when the evening ended and Rex walked me back to our room, helping me carry plates laden with Thanksgiving food for our guards, but my stomach kept swooping and diving, and my dress felt constricting. So much had happened today, like I'd lived an entire year in 24 hours. I felt overwhelmed by the prospect of sorting through it all, especially since it wasn't quite over. Rex and I would be sleeping in the same suite again, supposedly in different bedrooms like last night, but so much had changed since this morning. I was uncertain what to expect when we arrived at our door. And I still had questions. Vanessa's advice about desserts and men had given me a new perspective, but I didn't understand why Rex hadn't fought for Vanessa instead of pushing her at Ryan. If one of his friends had shown interest in me, would he have sent me off with them? Despite all my other questions, this one seemed like the most pressing. Therefore, once we were safely in the elevator, just the two of us, and Rex turned to me, I asked, "Why'd you introduce Vanessa to Ryan?" The question clearly caught him off guard.
"Pardon?"
I readjusted my grip on the whole pie in my left hand. I had a plate of mashed potatoes, gravy, turkey, stuffing, cranberry sauce, macaroni and cheese, and green beans in my right. "You took Vanessa as your date somewhere and then sent her off with Ryan."
"I guess."
Rex had one plate like mine, filled with Thanksgiving food, and carried a bag filled with items from the bread cornucopia. "Why?" His focus turned inward.
"They seem to hit it off."
"But she was your date."
"Yeah."
"What do you mean, yeah? You asked her there for a reason."
"I met her through my agent and I thought she'd dig Ryan."
He shrugged.
"He's a good guy."
"So you set them up?"
"Sure, if you want to call it that."
"What would you call it?" He set the bag down and took the pie from me, placing it on top of the other items in the bag and freeing up my hand.
"I'd call it exposure. I wasn't setting them up, just seeing if they'd hit it off."
Did you ever think of exposing me to anyone? He lifted an eyebrow, like he found my question ridiculous.
No.
Because you can't think of anyone I'd be a good fit for?
No, Abby. I want you for myself.
He sounded a little irritated, maybe even angry, by the question. I stepped back from that line of questioning and returned to the real issue. So you really did run a matchmaking service, huh?
I don't know about that.
Rex glanced at the buttons, watching our progress as the elevator climbed. Then explain to me why you set so many of your friends up on dates with their now wives. The elevator dinged, the door opened, he picked up the bag and we stepped out.
I think I told you. For some reason, folks always want to set me up. Me in particular.
Maybe they saw you as a challenge?
I don't know, might be. I'd get introduced to a lot of women.
But no mothers, I quipped. He cracked a grin.
Sometimes I'd get an idea that a particular woman would be a good fit for a guy I knew. Similar interests, values, that kind of thing. If a woman reminded me of a specific guy I knew, then I'd make sure to introduce them.
As your date?
Yeah. Less pressure that way for both of them.
He guided me around the corner. Nicholas and Stan came into view. Interesting.
But then O'Day caught on and...
Rex shook his head.
He made something out of it.
Something gross.
Right.
So you stopped.
Yep.
I sighed. That's too bad.
Nah, I was done. I don't have many single friends anymore. Just a few guys on the team, and then there's also Cyrus. Alaric. That's it.
We'd arrived at our door, and Nicholas had already unlocked it, holding it open for us. I held out the plate I'd been carrying and pushed it into Nicholas's hands. Here, this is for you. I then plucked the plate out of Rex's fingers and passed it to Stan. This is for you. There's a table in the suite. Come in and eat. The two men frowned at each other, then at Rex. Rex shrugged.
Abby insists.
I grabbed each of the guards by their upper arms and pulled them inside the suite. I didn't bring wine, for obvious reasons, but there's a pie and bread in the bag. I can also make some mocktails if you're interested. Assuming this place has soda and cranberry juice. Leaving the guys at the table, I crossed to the mini fridge and made a happy sound when I found it well stocked. Ooh, how does a mock Mai Tai sound? I see coconut, cranberry, and OJ. That's my recommendation. The men looked at Rex again. He gave a single head nod. They turned back to me and nodded. Placing my hands on my hips, I narrowed my eyes at all three of them. Don't look at him! I'm the one who asked you the question.
But he's scary, Abby,
Stan said. His eyes then flickered to Rex.
No offense. None taken.
Rex strolled toward his room, dipping his chin, but not before I saw a pleased smile move over his features. I grunted, my eyes watching Rex as he disappeared into his bedroom and shut the door. Seeing that the guards were still standing, I pointed to the chairs. Sit down, eat. I'll make some drinks.
Are you sure?
Nicholas slowly pulled out a chair. Meanwhile, Stan sat hurriedly, lifting the top off his dinner and dug in using the flatware we'd brought with the food. You must be starved, I said, pleased to see his apparent appetite.
It's not that.
Nicholas lifted the top off his plate, sending me a wry look.
He wants to finish before the big guy comes back out. Bingo!
Stan spoke around a bite of food. I chuckled, shaking my head and measuring out the cranberry juice. Everyone calls him scary. He's really not at all.
He's tall as a mountain and just ripped apart Richmond's entire offensive line today.
Nicholas muttered, spearing a few green beans.
Not that I'm complaining, but I'm not sure why we're here. Someone will have to be insane to mess with you. And you're his wife.
Stan swallowed and scooped up more potatoes.
You wouldn't think he's scary. It'd be weird if you did.
I made a noncommittal sound and finished with their mocktails, carrying them over to the table just as Rex walked out of his room, carrying his bag. My eyes rounded, darting between his face and his bag, and my heart skipped a beat. Where are...
You remember, I have to fly back tonight.
He said smoothly, threading his fingers through mine and lifting my hand for a kiss. My brain stuttered, confusion and disappointment mixing with just a hint of relief. Rex inspected my face for a moment, then let my hand drop.
I'll call you when I touch down in Chicago.
Before he could move too far away, I turned and hurried after him. Come with me. Grabbing his arm, I pulled him over to my room and inside, shutting the door after us. I faced him and whispered hurriedly, "What's going on? You're leaving?" He didn't look mad or aloof or upset. He looked concerned.
"You need time."
"I do?"
"You do this thing where you don't react in the moment. You sort of stuff it down. Then you think about it and react later."
I reared back. He stepped forward and, without touching me elsewhere, kissed me swiftly. I grabbed his shoulders as he moved to lean away, my heart twisting, my breath caught in my lungs.
"I should go. Bernadette got me a flight, but it leaves in an hour and a half."
"Don't go." My fingers dug into his shoulders. "We have separate rooms. You're right, I do need to think about things, but that's no reason to leave." The side of his mouth tugged upward.
"No, you need time. I need to leave."
"Why?" Rex hesitated, his gaze conducting a slow, careful inspection of my features before saying,
"I won't be able to sleep here with you so close. I learned that in Austin and last night."
"You could sleep in here with me."
"No. You haven't made a decision yet. You know where I stand, and now you need to figure out what you want without me breathing down your neck."
"We'll just sleep," I pleaded. "I promise." He shook his head firmly, but his smile lingered.
"No, Abby."
I let my hands drop and stepped away, crossing my arms. "Why? Because I'm so irresistible? You can't keep your hands to yourself for one night? You're afraid of what? You'll lose control? Is that why?" I punctuated the ridiculous questions with a frustrated huff. Something shadowy flickered behind his expression, and his smile dropped. Or rather, it turned sharper somehow. Stark.
"Yes,"
he said quietly.
"That's why."
He held my gaze for a protracted moment, everything about him still and serious. I blinked, stunned, speechless. With one more hard look, he turned. He opened the door. He left. Kaylee dropped into her usual stool but had to tuck her briefcase under the bar top instead of the seat next to her. We were packed. "What can I get you, gorgeous?" I asked with a wink, already reaching for her martini glass.
"A Valium."
"We don't serve that." I poured vodka directly into the shaker.
"Then a martini, I guess."
She made a face of distaste at the couple sitting next to her, fiddling with her earring. "It's so crowded in here. Who are all these people?" The bar had been slammed since the weekend after Thanksgiving, and the relentless pace had continued ever since. This was fairly standard during the busy shopping season. Our placement in close proximity to shops and boutiques meant traffic remained steady from the moment we opened at 2 p.m. until we closed up at 1 a.m. "See that guy there?" I lifted my chin to a fit-looking fella at table 4. "He's an astronaut." Kaylee frowned at me and then looked over her shoulder. "Really?" "No." I couldn't hold in my laughter as I added dry vermouth to the shaker. She turned back to me with an eye squint. "Very funny. I actually believed you for a second. Rex is rubbing off on you, I see.
She wagged her eyebrows. I made a face but said nothing, stalling by shaking her martini. True to his word, Rex had called me last Thursday night, or rather super early Friday morning, when his plane arrived in Chicago. Text messages were also waiting for me on my phone when I woke up Friday, and he'd continued this tradition of ours all week. The messages were nothing serious or urgent, just checking in, seeing how my day was going, sending me memes or jokes or telling me a funny story. I found myself waking up earlier and earlier and sleeping less and less because I was so excited to read his texts. With the cool weather, it felt like waking up to Christmas morning every day.
I like the decorations this year.
Kaylee swiveled slightly on her stool, tilting her head back to peer at the ceiling.
Is that mistletoe?
I nodded.
I put it over your seat so I could kiss you every time you come in.
Her hand came to her chest, and she made a tisking sound. You are the best, Abby. Saturday, after closing, I'd enlisted the two guards who'd been assigned to my late shift, Mary and Jake, to help me decorate the bar for Christmas. We strung Christmas lights back and forth on the liquor shelves, hung tinsel and mistletoe from the ceiling, and decorated a fake Christmas tree with ornaments I'd either made or collected over the years. I never had a Christmas tree at my tiny apartment. All my ornaments ended up here. I also switched out our plain white paper napkins with holiday-themed ones that contained cheesy jokes and conversation starters. Placing Kaylee's drink in front of her, I leaned over the bar and gave her a kiss on the cheek. When I pulled away, she was smiling like she'd won something.
So, what brings you in?
I turned and pulled two tickets off the order printer, clipping them in front of me as I set to work making drinks for tables 7 and 11.
Actually, you.
Oh? Rex called me. My hand spasmed around a whiskey bottle, and I looked up sharply in surprise.
Is that so?
Yes. I reminded him that I was your lawyer, not his, but he only wanted some gift ideas for you.
I reared back. Really?
Yes, really. Kaylee sipped her martini, watching me over the rim.
What did you tell him?
I said I'd send a list.
Which is why I'm here. What do you want me to tell him to get you?
What?
I was shocked.
Shocked?
Knowing Kaylee, I shouldn't have been, but I was.
Kaylee, that's not right. You know what I want.
She tapped her nails on the surface of the bar.
I'm not telling him to get you socks or a gift certificate to a yarn store. Come on.
What do you want? A new car? A kiln? What's that brand you're always talking about? Sloot? Scoot?
Scut. Hurriedly, I made the drinks for tables 7 and 11 and set them on the pickup station.
Yes, she snapped. One of those.
I have no room for a scut kiln. Besides, they require special electrical. You have to have an electrician come in and do some rewiring. I doubt building management would let me have a kiln.
Then what do you want that's crazy expensive and that you'd never buy yourself?
I pressed my lips into a stiff line and walked down the length of the bar away from her and her devious questions, checking on the other patrons and taking my time refilling drinks. I hoped she'd let the issue drop or forget about it by the time I returned.
So, what? How about some sexy lingerie?
She pushed her empty martini glass toward me and shook her head when I asked if she wanted another.
I don't want Rex to buy me anything.
What? Why not?
You know why,
I replied, harassed.
I haven't decided whether or not to explore things with him.
She frowned with her entire face. I thought you told me you guys made out in Richmond.
On Sunday, before work, I'd related the whole story of what had happened in Richmond. Everything except Rex telling me he loved me. But I'd been very clear that I hadn't made a decision yet one way or the other regarding a future with him. At the time, she'd seemed to understand my reasons and had applauded my prudence.
Now she wanted me to give Rex a list of expensive gifts to buy me for Christmas. We're not dating, Kaylee. I filled a glass with ice and water and set it on her napkin. She leaned forward and mimicked my tone.
That doesn't mean he can't try to woo you, Abby.
I grit my teeth because she'd hit a nerve. On Sunday, after Kaylee had left, I'd made the mistake of watching Sportsnet TV and caught the tail end of Clarence O'Day's segment on Thanksgiving games. They hadn't mentioned Rex's nickname or made any jokes about being training wheels for his ex-girlfriends, but Clarence had said,
"I think McMurtry stepped it up because his new wife was there."
"You can't be serious," the other announcer said. Clarence had given his head a quick shake.
"If I had a woman who looked like that in the stadium watching me, I could sack Richmond's quarterback four times, too."
"You're saying he played the game of his life to impress his wife?" Clarence had raised an eyebrow and seemed poised to respond, clearly with something gross. The other anchor had quickly lifted a hand to stop him.
"On second thought, don't answer that. I could drill it down for you." "Hey, now, this is a family show,"
the other man had said, and then changed the subject. Rex had played the game of his life because of Rex, not because of me. Not because he wanted to impress me or woo me, or because I had a magical pussy that had bestowed gladiator powers upon him, as everyone seemed to be implying. We hadn't discussed it, but the whole thing infuriated me. Presently, exasperated, I walked away from Kaylee, checking the order printer again. It was empty. Rex had been right. I'd needed time to think things through. Unfortunately, the week since returning to Austin had been crazy. Mary, Jake, and I finished decorating the bar in record time Saturday night, and I made it back to the Four Seasons around 2:30 a.m. That's right, I was still sleeping at the hotel. According to the guards who'd met me at the airport on Friday, Declan had been swinging by my apartment every day throughout the day and banging on my door. Unbeknownst to him, they'd recorded him each time he arrived, continued recording when they asked him to leave, and then captured his veiled threats as he departed. I was told it wasn't against the law for him to stop by, just as long as he didn't linger or directly threaten me, but that his behavior pattern painted a threatening picture. It was suggested, and I readily agreed, that I stay at the Four Seasons for the time being while the security company Rex had hired documented Declan's comings and goings. Once we had enough evidence of his harassment, we could then file for a restraining order. We'd already documented his visit to the bar last Tuesday and him parking outside my apartment later that day. Video footage of him swinging by every day for a week after being told I didn't wish to see him should be enough. If he popped up again after the restraining order went into effect, he'd be arrested. That was the plan. The whole thing made me sad, casting a shadow over the start of the Christmas season. How did people without the means to hire bodyguards and stay at a hotel deal with this kind of harassment? Contemplating it made me sick to my stomach. Talking to Rex, however, always brightened my day. He hadn't been pushing me to make a decision. In fact, he hadn't brought it up even once. He knew about the situation with Declan, so maybe he didn't want to add to my stress. Declan being crazy, plus sleeping at the hotel, plus working every shift since returning from Richmond, plus low sleep, plus driving over to the pottery studio early every morning to work on inventory for the upcoming Christmas markets, I hadn't had more than a moment to think about a future with Rex. That's a lie. You think about it and him all the time. I rolled my eyes at myself. Okay, yes, I did think about Rex all the time. But it wasn't quality thinking, it was wishful thinking. And it gave me heartburn. Last night, as I'd fallen asleep, I'd decided to just go for it and tell Rex I wanted to do this for real. Then I'd woken up gasping, heart racing at 2 a.m. from a nightmare where I'd been arrested for serving gin instead of vodka in my gimlets.
unable to avoid Kaylee anymore, I meandered back over to her.
Listen, I don't want Rex to buy me anything. Just tell him you don't think it would be a good idea.
She shook her head.
But I do think it's a good idea.
What is wrong with you? Why can't you let yourself have nice things?
I do.
You don't. You feel guilty about it. Every time something good happens to you or is given to you, you don't trust it. Like you expect it to blow up in your face.
Maybe because it always does, I whispered harshly.
Just once. It blew up just once, and you're still holding everyone responsible for what Declan did.
If her voice had been any less kind, and her eyes had been any less soft, I likely would have walked off in a huff and disregarded her words. But she got to me because I could see she cared. My throat working, I leaned against the bar with both hands and glanced at the mistletoe above her.
Do you want another kiss?
No.
I want you to have faith, Abby. I blinked against a sudden sting behind my eyes.
Faith. I want you to have faith in yourself.
She reached forward and covered my hand on the bar, giving it a tight squeeze.
Good things can happen to you. You should let them happen to you without being afraid that the big bad wolf is around the corner. And you should believe that you deserve them.
Chapter 23. Surprise is the warrior's greatest weapon. Aaron Hunter, Into the Wild. 11 days after returning from Richmond, with all the meticulous documentation completed by the security company and the video footage of Declan's daily visits to my apartment, the court granted my petition for a restraining order and Declan was served that afternoon. I felt relieved, but also scared. I didn't think my ex would take the news well, and I had no doubts he'd disobey the order. He didn't like to be ignored, and he'd retaliate sooner or later. The next day, I woke up to a text from Rex.
Rex. But